the humanities, taking a look at humanities scholarship events and research on campus and beyond, and a lot of it online now, of course, too. Carolina Public Humanities, available online at humanities.unc.edu. Joined, as always, in the studio by Max Orr, who heads up Carolina Public Humanities. We've got a special guest on the phone. We'll introduce him in just a second, but Max, thank you so much for being with us. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I'm not ready for fall weather because I like summer to begin.
I kind of like the summer as well, to be honest.
I feel like I've been in my house since the spring,
right?
Because I have indeed. But at any rate,
it's going to be really interesting to get into fall because like all of these restaurants have shifted to outdoor dining, and it's been fantastic. As the temperature starts to drop, like they're going to have to add some heaters and things. Well, so we'll see how that goes.
You know, I'm from Vermont, and I heard about doing outdoor education. I said, well, that'll be great in about 2 weeks from now. I'll see how that works out for everyone.
Yeah.
Well, as always, I do want to bring our guest on quickly, but as always, I bring something related to the date, and this is a tricky one, because in 1752, Aaron, it should have been September 3rd in Great Britain today, but in 1752, they switched to the Gregorian calendar,
yeah.
Making today September 14th. Does anybody really know what time it is? At any rate, I know our guest knows what time it is because it's time to bring him on. Our guest is none other than Andrew Perrin. Dr. Andrew Perrin is the Ruhl Tyson Distinguished Professor of the Humanities, Professor of Sociology, as well as the Director of the Institute for the Arts and Humanities, and our good friend Andy Perrin. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. It's good to join you guys.
Well, you're here for a reason, of course, not just because we like you and you have very interesting things to say, but you have really interesting things to say about public universities and democracy. And, of course, our next Humanities in Action is coming up on Wednesday, and you will be the featured speaker. So, boy, just today we found out that the History Department is going to suspend graduate cohort for 1 year.
And I saw that, yes.
Just gives you a sense of what is happening to public universities. So I guess I'd like to just start out by an overarching look at why are public universities so important for democracy, and then we can get into the weeds a little bit about what we're facing.
Sure, and I'm looking forward to the talk on Wednesday. This will give you a little quick précis for it. You know, the truth is that in the American context in particular, all universities and all colleges are really directly tied to how we think about the practice of democracy, and that's because the practice of democracy is essentially about being able to communicate well with fellow citizens, being able to use evidence to discuss things with them, to solve problems, and to come to agreements. And what that means is that democracy really is essentially, and this is the point I'll try and make on Wednesday, it is essentially an intellectual project. It's a project of thinking and communicating. And where better do we actually prepare people to do a great job of thinking and communicating with others than in universities? The thing that makes public universities particularly special is twofold. One, they educate the vast majority of students in the country. So when you think about just where all that education, where that good communication is coming from, the vast majority of students are educated by public universities in this country. And number two, those are the places that have the public mission, that have the you know, in their very DNA is the goal of doing things on behalf of the public. And so for those two reasons, public universities are particularly important for those tasks of building and sustaining a strong democratic public.
Do you find that there's a difference in public and private universities in the way that they conceive their mission in that sense?
I mean, yes, it's true. In fact, I'm in the middle of a research project where I'm studying the mission statements of all the major colleges and universities in the United States during the course of the 20th century and looking at how they changed and which kinds of places put citizenship and democracy central to their missions. And the answer is yes. Certain kinds of universities and colleges are more likely to state that than others. But it's certainly true that in terms of kind of putting their money where their mouth is, it's the public universities that really underscore those democratic skills and that do so for more students more effectively.
Annie, you are preaching to the choir here in terms of our belief in the importance of the discourse that happens on university campuses being so essential to the democratic process. But of course, you are going to come across the sort of specter of elitism in that. You know, not everybody does go to colleges, not everybody does go to universities. And of course, the farther back we go in time, the more that this experiment was, in fact, training the elite leaders of the republic, if you will, to engage in that. How do you square that, and how do you downplay this accusation of elitism?
Well, a couple things to say. Number one, you know, the truth is that the fact that we know that going to college generally makes people better citizens, and we've got good data to show that, it doesn't follow that you can't be a good citizen without going to college. That's not the idea at all. But rather, we do know that access to college, access to a good education, does make people both more likely to be involved in the public sphere and more likely to do a better job of it when they're there. And so it's not a matter of elitism or not elitism. It's a matter of just looking at the data and the advantage that extra education confers. The other thing I'd say is colleges and universities are not just places for students. As you know very well, Max, you know, you're doing work that reaches out to people who are not students.
I'm glad you noticed.
And a lot of the work that we do on university campuses is about bringing those ideas, those practices, those values, the same set of skills to an audience that's broader than just the people who actually come there to be students.
Speaking with Andrew Perrin, who's going to be the featured speaker at a virtual Humanities in Action. This is an online event on Wednesday, the 16th, from 3:30 to 5 p.m. It's called The Public University in American Democracy. You can get more information and sign up online at humanities.unc.edu. And Andrew, I know you'll be talking about the role of the public university in American democracy today, but your research also covers the history of American democracy and the way in which that concept has changed and shifted, both in the way it's been manifested and the way it's been understood. So how has the role of the public university in American democracy changed over time?
Well, you know, so the biggest and the most important shift in that role over time is simply the increase in overall access to higher education. Mm-hmm. And that happens in a couple of big waves. The biggest wave is probably in the 1970s, but the shift from college as being, as Max said before, a place that basically the elites go to train themselves, to being a place that allows both for economic mobility but also for widespread access to ideas, right? That shift really is what enables us to think about the university underwriting the sort of cultural practice of democracy. And so I think that overall goal of access is crucially important. The thing that we need to, I think, be concerned about is that we don't water down the rigor of it by making that access broader, right? So one of the things that is really important is that we push students to think about ideas they disagree with, to use evidence to do that disagreement and to do so respectfully and carefully. I think if you listen to some of the critics on the conservative end of the spectrum, the things they're most worried about is that students are getting too much of an echo chamber, and they're not learning to really defend or consider ideas that they may find objectionable. And so I think the biggest concern that we ought to be having is how do we train students and demonstrate the values of civil but serious, frank disagreement, using evidence and logic and argument over identity and emotion.
And I think that speaks so directly to something that you said earlier and really needs to be brought out, that when we think about democracy, so often we think of it as an activity. You go to the polls and you vote every 2 years or every 4 years, but democracy is an activity, but it's also a mindset. You have to believe in the value of democracy, and it's also a set of skills. You have to be able to engage in those conversations and engage with other ideas.
That's absolutely right, yes.
You know, When I think about this conversation about democracy and public universities, of course, the one thing we want to think about is the funding for these institutions is so tied to the political process. And when you were talking about the sort of distrust of universities from some people on the right end of the spectrum, that filters into the legislature themselves. And it seems to me like we just only have been cutting university budgets for about 20, 25 years. And whenever there's a huge hit, like in 2009, we take a big cut, but we never come back. How can we, will this process of using the university to train people in democracy and being a little bit more explicit about that eventually help us go back to the legislature and get the public to invest in public universities?
Well, I sure hope so. You know, I actually think that is exactly the right way for us to make the case for that absolutely crucial institution that is the public university. And that is to say, we actually are not a place that's trying to, you know, brainwash students into one or another political position, and we ought not be that. And so I'll break with some of my more left colleagues in that position. But rather, we are a place that ought to train students in some of those core skills and ideas about talking across difference, about using evidence, about talking with respect and listening carefully, thoughtfully to others. Those are core democratic skills. They're skills that everyone on every side of the political aisle ought to want our students to develop well. And so, you know, my pitch really, forgetting about my own political views, my pitch really is that the university is an absolutely essential institution for preserving the cultural working or the cultural success of democracy, and that ought to be, honestly, a bipartisan and a sort of a consensus position in favor of great public universities.
The event is the Public University in American Democracy. It's going to be Wednesday the 16th, 2 days from now, 3:30 to 5 p.m. You can sign up for it at the Carolina Public Humanities website, which is humanities.unc.edu. Max Orr, over to you. Other things that folks need to know about this event or others coming up?
Well, coincidentally, after this discussion of democracy, we'll be talking about dictators all next week with our dictators seminar coming up. And I do hope to bring in some guests next week to talk a little bit about maybe Caesar or Stalin or some of the other wonderful anti-democratic people we'll be talking about.
I know, Andrew, you wrote a book on Tocqueville is democracy, and how much overlap is there between the two at the end of that book?
I'm sorry, overlap between Tocqueville and democracy?
I was we're moving from democracy into dictatorship, and that reminds me of Tocqueville there at the end.
Oh, gotcha. Yes. I mean, I think, yes, the question about the role of culture in preventing dictatorship is certainly a Tocquevillian concern. So I'm excited for that, your future work as well, Max.
Great.
And again, humanities.unc.edu for more information. Max, before we let you go, history, no grad students?
This is a decision that was made. You know, we've had budget cuts for a number of years. And it's, you know, when you bring in a new cohort every year, and you just want to make sure you can provide that cohort with all the resources that they need. We want to provide underprivileged students better stipends and give them, because, you know, graduate students don't have a living wage, if you know. And so it was a strategic decision. Some of it, I believe, is done preventive to sort of give ourselves a little pause. But in many ways, you know, we're seeing graduate education, and this is perhaps something Andrew can discuss in the talk coming up on Wednesday about graduate education. It's a whole other difficult thing to work out, and certainly humanities graduate education is not profitable right away, if you will, and so it's a very tough decision. It was done in a faculty retreat last week, and a lot of hand-wringing, but we think this is the ethical thing to do in this particular situation.
Well, again, head online and get more on Wednesday's event at humanities.unc.edu. Should be a good one on Wednesday afternoon. Max Orr, Andrew Perrin, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Looking forward to it.